So with the inquiry time, any areas of interest and concern for you, please feel free to come. Some dialogue then gets underway. It may last a few minutes, 10 minutes, longer. I think the longest ever was maybe hour and a half. But that's extremely unusual. And any time the person or myself can say thank you to bring it to a close, shared minute or two of silence together, then another invitation. And we flow on, remembering as well the fullness of listening. Two people are speaking up front, and the inner listening to the responses that you may be having as you listen, all with the purpose to contribute to insight and understanding for each and every one of us. There's the microphone here, and of course the encouragement to ensure that those in the rear of the hall can hear. And you will have seen some young people, I think from the UK and the US, most looks like in the probably the late teens and early 20s, and they would like to drop in this evening, and they've got their priorities first because they eat at 7:30, and so please be loving and patient rather than knock the door. And so some of the young people may come in when they feel like it, because it's their privilege, because they're teenagers. All right. So anyone who didn't come up previously for inquiry is welcome to come and take a seat. With the recording?
Yeah.
Yeah? Let me just switch this thing on, if I can.
And does it look like you on the pill?
You can see it, yeah, anyway. Yeah, of course. It's easier, better. Rather, I like this synchronicity. The thought just arose. The Imam is speaking, and it's the call of the faithful over there in the lovely village in the valley. I was just taking some photographs from here yesterday. And that's been going on for well over 1,000 years over there. And I won't call it the call of the faithful here. But it's the same that's been going on here for a little bit longer. But it's the same nice long tradition. Boy, is this the land of traditions. Anyway. Yes, my dear.
I want to ask less about, well, it's about the practice, but more yes. About the way.
About the way, yes.
The way that we live our life, and the obstacles that comes on the way from the outside. Mm. An obstacle I recently phrased as fem heli. So,
a what?
Fem heli. The hellish part of the family.
Oh, okay.
So, yes, big obstacle. So, and also big gift, of course. So, I will phrase.
Yeah, okay.
Maybe you can give some light for me. Today, Sandhya talked about trusting life.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel very much that far from family. I feel this way for me, trusting life and being curious and being surprised by the moments, by the day, but what comes, and it's amazing and I really enjoy it. And when I meet my family, then a lot of really difficult things come, because I'm not so lucky like these families that one person go to Vipassana, then everyone goes. No, like they think we are really wasting our time. And
I know some other teachers are okay with it, but the act of respect in here is to sit up and listen rather than lie down. So those that can lie down can be dead, and I regard that as a poor excuse. And sometimes for those who have genuine back issues and back problems. Okay, carry on.
Okay. So this thing of the family, that is the close family, the distance family, that these people, some of them believe and they state sentences like, I will be happy when you will be happy, my happiness is depend on you, you should do that, why you don't do this, what will you do?
Sorry. One sentence will cover that.
Okay, yeah, they interfere all the time and they put a lot on you. And
they're not putting a lot on us, they're putting a lot on you.
Oh yeah, on you I mean at one, at me.
Okay,
yeah,
okay.
Putting a lot on me.
Personal, so
yes, putting a lot on me. Mm-hmm. And And like I discovered that it's something that I have to confront, because even if I think I will go away and I live in a distant country, then some events happened like a wedding or a funeral or something, and you need to meet this environment that don't respect your way.
I need to meet, not you.
I need to meet.
All right. Yeah.
Yes, I need to meet this environment that doesn't really respect my way.
Right.
And then I need to go for 2 weeks retreat for.
Okay, so we go slowly here. I agree, and others may also have this experience, where various authority figures, in this case family members, others, say things to us, and those statements that come to us can put a lot of pressure. I can only be happy if you're happy, or telling us what we should do and how we should spend our lives, etc. And that, genuinely, I agree, can have some impact. And that those voices of authority can be mother and father or others. So, who are you going to listen to?
I listen to myself, but it's still very, very painful, because it's not like, oh, you should have a job with a pension. It's really violent, so it's still painful.
Okay. This is a difficult question for you. Is there any other way of listening other than to yourself, which is painful?
Not to listen to myself is painful.
Is there another way of listening to yourself which is not painful?
No, it's not painful to listen to myself. It's painful to experience the to experience all the point of views. It's more than just remarks. It's like, I will not tell you how you need to live your life. I will tell you how you need to look at your life. And when you are a minority.
When I am in a minority.
When I am in a minority. Sorry, wow. Cut me there. When I'm in a minority, in my point of view, then it's all around. And it's just, I mean, geographically, like going 2 hours to the north, it's different. I'm free of this. But maybe going back to 03 to the center, I feel the pressure. Right. I feel the stress.
In the engagement with people, if it there is too much pressure, too much stress, and they are with particular individuals, which includes family members, in your case, it seems to me there's one or two options. One is stay away. And the second is, if you go, go really clear, mindful, and a deep commitment inside oneself that one is, one's practice is to be able to listen to those voices and recognize that they are voices from there. And that you don't have to buy them, you don't have to identify with them, you don't have to take hold of them. They are just voices. The resistance to them and the struggle is at the moment you're giving them much too much authority. Much too much. Any response?
I was thinking actually one thing today. Please, that was actually like an enlightenment, not enlightenment, for you, for me, was a good thought.
Go on.
That, like my mother said this very silly sentence, she's not even Polish, and she said, I will be happy when you'll be happy. And I tried to tell her I'm happy, and she said, no, you're not. And I was like, and then I thought that in the minute that my happiness will not be dependent on them being happy with me, because I also put this, because it's also important for me that they will accept me. Then if I release this part in some very, very magical way, because it's very difficult to release this place, that you want your family to accept you and to be proud and happy. It's really difficult to release this condition that we have in us, I think. And that creates this... Okay.
Some of us...
For me, I'm sorry. For me, it's difficult to release.
No. Some of us have the feeling, if our parents are not happy with us, we must be on the right track.
I want them to love me.
Eh? Go on. Come on, what's going on here with all this body language? Take your time. It's a tissue if you need. It's okay, we got some. I'm not sure if it's enough, but
you said today about like this, you are not here. She was telling a story about how people are proud of themselves for going against the water, going down, and when they'll die, everyone will be proud. So in my sister's wedding, I'm sorry because I'm like talking maybe about not respectful, but they were praising, like meshabchim, praising the qualities of the married couple, that they are determined and hard worker and competitive, and they will reach the goal, and I don't know, all kind of qualities that are opposite. Like, and I was thinking, oh, this is what will make you be proud, if I will be determined and hard worker and reach my goals. And I don't know, there is this thing that like, I don't know, like, mothers, they talk about their
My mother.
My mom. no, my mother don't do this. But, you know.
I thought so. Go on.
Well, parents, they say, my son, he's a doctor, la, la, la. I'm proud, proud, proud. And it's like, I feel for me, it's something that I want to enjoy my life and to enjoy the precious thing and to enjoy learning Dharma or traveling or discovering things and creating and whatever. But then there is also this thing of I want you to be proud of me. And also, I was thinking that when I meet them in an intensive period and they all ask me, what do you do? What do you do? Why you don't do this? You have this thing. You have this talent. You can do that. Then I get like a trigger for ego. Because I want to show them, oh, yes, I have something.
Slowly, slowly. When you make reference to your parents, your voice gets faster and faster. It goes up a scale. And it sounds like the daughter is rather dependent on the view of the parents. It does sound like that. Yeah.
Where do you take it out?
Eh?
Where do you take this out?
Well, you could be a fully grown woman who is no longer the child. That it's time to for the daughter to stop whining about her parents.
Well, it's not that, but
it's some of it, isn't it? Not that?
The
voice has not been whining about the parents' impact upon you?
Well, I didn't... Yeah, I will not open all the Pandora's now.
No,
so, yeah. Okay, so I said this, and
if you, a small suggestion: when you go to see your good parents next time, don't walk in as the daughter.
No, as a matter of fact, when I came now from dear UK, and after 6 months of not being there, I thought I will do 12 months, but then she decided to get married in September.
Slowly, the voice. Whoa,
I arrived, and my little sister, she's 12, and she said, wow, Shai, you're all the time flattering the parents, you're all the time telling them good things. And I really saw them, like, from a very open heart and
okay.
The best things.
Nice.
So not like the child. So
Keep that sense and trust just in that. So that, as I said earlier, they have their voices. No doubt they mean well there. But as you said, you have to live your life. You have to trust in yourself. You have to engage and take responsibilities for the actions that you do. And you've got to remember that between one ear and the other, there is a huge amount of space. And the purpose for that space is that a lot of what you hear and what we hear can go in one ear and straight out the other. And if you go home with lots of space in your head, there would be no problem. Thank you.
Thank you.
Father, anyone, anytime. Yes, yes, please, come. With the recording?
Yeah, I don't mind. My question is not personal, but more informative.
Yeah, please, yes.
It's about what is called the Vipassana meditation.
Yes.
And I wanted to ask you if you practice and teach the Vipassana meditation, which is not connected to the breath,
mm-hmm.
but to the inner sensations as taught by, what's his name? You. Goenka. Yeah, I forgot. And, what do you think about this meditation if you teach it and
I see.
Can you elaborate about it?
Yeah. I can, of course. Have you done a Goenka course?
Yep.
You did. How many have you done?
Just once.
Just once. And how long ago did you do the Goenka meditation course?
It was about a year and a half ago.
Oh, yeah, quite recent. Be lovely to hear from you in doing that course. Any benefits for you? Any impressions that were left for you after the 10-day course?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, if you wish, would you like to say anything about the time?
It was very intensive, mm-hmm. very, as you said, very serious.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. But also in a good way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And there is something that goes in the way I felt it, deeper than just the breath, because it's kind of almost going into a state of between sleeping and being awake.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And like dreaming. Mm. And really, I felt that there is something very interesting about the way it works inside the body with the sensations that with only with the breath is not exactly the same. It's not as, I don't even know how to describe. It's not as strong and mm-hmm. as intensive and as also interesting in a way.
Mm-hmm. So, coming back to the question, rather a long time ago, in the 1970s, in fact, as I mentioned, I sat to a three retreat with Goenka when he was in India, where he actually gave most of the retreats. And in the 10-day period, and subsequently too, and there will be a number of people in the hall here who have sat those 10-day retreats, the primary emphasis, as you referred to, very much on the sitting practice, as the practice, quite a few hours during the course of the day, with the first 3 days given to mindfulness of breathing, and especially the tip of the nose, and then followed on the fourth afternoon, with the sweeping through the body, and developing equanimity to what arises. And that has been, and continues to be, a very constant theme, through the teachings, with the use of the video, as you know, with the evening talk. And genuinely people do get a lot of benefit from that approach there. And it's one of many, many kinds of explorations of vipassana that are taking place. The Gomukhaji has made an important contribution in this regard. That for some people it does work well, and for others, and it's typical here as well, it may not work so well. The person may find it too controlling, too intense, and putting too much pressure on the body and mind, and that isn't helpful. A person may need close one-to-one connection with a teacher, which there's the opportunity to speak about a whole range and variety of experiences, and for the teacher have the wisdom and the skill to the teachers. There, the tape is played, but or the video, but of course, with beloved Gwinkaji, not present, and of course now there's no opportunity to ask questions about things which are said of the teacher who actually said it.
There is a teacher there, but you can ask him questions. But
yes, but there's no substitute if you're listening to a talk every evening to actually ask the questions of the person who gave the talk. So here, one of the changes that is in the move over is a move away from intensity there towards calmness and clarity, and also the importance of happiness and presence there. And this is a significant shift away from, while giving equal respect to all four postures, sitting, walking, standing, and reclining. Why? Because human beings spend our life in these four postures or moving between them. Therefore, we say all is worthy of attention, and that does include, as you pointed out, that refinement, shall we say, of it feeling the bodily life as a field of sensations. Goenkaji rightly and skillfully and appropriately emphasizes that, and there's no difficulty with that. Here we are also deeply interested as well in the subtle feelings generated in the mind, the movements of the heart, the place of thought, and an expansiveness in the being. And those are some of the features that we explore. And the subtlety with the sensations, I say, can be found in sitting, walking, standing, and reclining. So there's differences with emphasis there. And people in their explorations need to find their own way and their own understanding with regard to this. Anything to add or subtract?
So I thought it's for advanced students. No, I thought that maybe you teach it, but for other courses, or I was waiting to another answer. Sorry. No, I didn't imagine that you just give it away like this.
I don't personally carry the view of advanced or less advanced so much. I'm a little concerned about that perception. Though having said that, the previous retreat, of course it was people who have done retreats before, and it was a joy and delight to work with those people. They are familiar with Dharma, with Povana, with the teachers, and sometimes with other traditions as well. And in this group, not all, but a fairly large percentage of the yogis who are here are quite new to Dharma, to Vipassana, to Tovana, to the three of us as the teachers and the forms. The actuality is, of course, that a person can come in, they've never sat on a retreat before, But there's something in the deep of the human being which really responds to the silences, to the stillnesses, to the depth, and something is emerging very, very quickly, very, very immediately, and it's just a joy to listen to. And there are others who struggle. So the Buddha said in these explorations, there are four kinds of people. There are those, the fortunate ones, who go happily and quickly to profound realization. There are those who go painfully but quickly to profound realization. There are those who go happily and slowly to profound realization. And then the rest all jump in and say, I must be the fourth category. There are those who go painfully and slowly. And everybody put their hand up. And we find that with yogis. So sometimes things may also be going very slowly, and then there's a dramatic change, and things start moving and happening extraordinarily quickly. And we've been listening to such voices here. And there are others as well who might move very quickly, you know, a lot of depth, a lot of insight, a lot of love of the heart, a lot of letting go taking place, and then reach a time of feeling stuck and floundering and struggling, etc. But it's all part of the great challenge of the inner work, and the retreat here is one expression. And we, which were mentioned to the yogis, one of the other distinguishing features, we could say, is that we encourage, and we encourage strongly, for people's right to explore, to engage in different kinds of retreats, Buddhist or otherwise, to use the resources of psychotherapy and yoga and tai chi and other means which help a human being to develop and grow as a human being. We do not support, and have never done so, a narrowing down to one particular methodology. I do not see that as a tool for liberation. Clear?
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
So I have a quiet minute and another invitation. Yes, anyone? Yes, please come. If you haven't been to an inquiry before, you're very welcome. If you have been, to let it go, to give others the opportunity. Go on. Two are coming for the inquiry. With the recording?
Yes.
Okay, all right.
Okay, so sorry for my English, it's not the best. I wanted to share that observing myself, yes. I saw that I used to criticize a lot and judge people, myself.
And it's something that I wish I could stop from doing because I see it's poisoning my life in a way. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to ask you, what is exactly this mental activity of criticizing? Why is it there? And maybe another point of view that I can see things and maybe stop it or.
I would say, generally speaking, the inner voice of the self-critic is the issue that possibly arises the most. It's one of those challenges and difficulties which we probably hear more than anything else. It is widespread. It's epidemic. It's incredibly pervasive. And, as you say, in a way we wonder, why do we do this to ourselves? You know, what has happened to us that internally, sometimes it seems like it's like a courtroom. There's a judge and a prosecutor. The defense lawyer's gone on holiday. And there's a jury. And then there's a sentence. And this internalized critic, yeah. And quite often the critic, obviously in its negative form, impacts upon us. And I mean, we give ourselves a hard time, as we say. And though the intentionality may be, say, I don't need this, I should let it go and to drop it, the inner critic will not take a blind bit of notice. There's not a chance of the thought arising and taking and adopting a position, oh, I should drop this, I should let it go. It may just be temporarily pushed aside, but like having an elastic band in the hand, you pull away from the elastic band, then you let, you know, boom, it's back under some kind of pressure. And this torments people's lives to a whole range.
I want to add something.
Go on, go on, yeah.
That it's also inner criticism, but it's also
outside well.
With my beloved ones.
Yes, exactly. And it's not at all unusual where there is the, as you say, the inner critic going on, where there is some pressure inside as well, which isn't resolved, the mind can't cope with it, so the critic of the other is an outlet for the pressure. So it's not enough doing it here when, boom, it lands there and then it may go to future and past and memories and all a kind of short temporary relief, you know, from the pressure that's going on with us. If we can't just drop it and say no more, I'm ask the question. It's not going to be easy. And we say no more because it keeps springing back. Is there any other way to work with the critic, to be with, whether inner, outer, or both? I mean, you know, I'm simply asking the question you asked me. And I'm avoiding answering.
I see. Maybe not letting an expression of the criticism, in order not to make harm or to anybody.
Okay. Which is a very valid and beautiful intention. And sometimes that's genuinely worthwhile to do. As we say in English, we bite the lip. And there is no wish to say anything deliberately to hurt nor harm the other. So there may be some, again, some pressure. The pressure still will have to go somewhere. And though it, there may be restraint and holding back from hurting and the feelings of the other, the holding back may put pressure in here. And then the pressure, of course, lands on us, or it builds, and despite the intention, boom, the rockets come out of the mouth. And we know this happens. So one is the commitment. And I think it genuinely is worth exploring. I think it's it. What other responses are available for you?
Maybe staying with it, observing it.
No.
So I ask you the question.
You've probably done that, like most of us, for years. Just observe it, just watch it. It's coming and going, and sometimes it's more coming than going. All right. So the watching, observing. Not expressing, etc. What other ways? All of it may help, it's not, but you may have to look a little deeper than that world of observation, discipline, commitment. May have to look from somewhere else inside the being. What comes?
This is why I'm here, because I have no answer.
No. Really. All right, okay. Let's go from the general to the particular. Has your critic had any good opportunities while you've been here in the last few days to either roast and toast yourself or others? Has the voice of the critic been alive and well here?
Yes, of course.
Yes, of course. Would you like to say about, you don't have to, about what? No, you don't have to say, but just ask.
Well, my husband is here, so I have to ask for his permission.
Right. Where's the good man? Huh? All right, okay. So she's asking permission. You're quite clear. You could say no. You know, you don't have to please her. You know, you could just say no. All right. Yes.
We go together. Remember.
Yeah. You hope. wicked. All right. Okay. So the good man has given you the okay.
I won't get too specific, but I criticize him a lot also at home. It's not something new here. I love him very much, of course, but it's something that arises. And I saw it here also, this criticism.
Yes. And can I even go a little... partly I'm just being nosy. But I prefer to call it inquiry.
Sounds more noble.
All right. So we're all curious. What? There's a good man. He's doing his best. He's going to be father very soon already, really, and he's working hard. What have you got to criticize him about?
No, it's too embarrassing. I'm sorry.
It's too embarrassing, all right.
I'm embarrassed of myself, of my thoughts, right. You know, not about anything.
Okay. So, there is not unusual. I love my husband, and the extra I find myself criticizing. So the voice of the critic, the judge, can act, as Jung would say, a kind of shadow over the love there. And so therefore, love being softer, more expansive, and more flexible there, is a contrast to the judge being judgmental, which has a certain hardness in the voice and in the inner voice, of course. And then the inner voice can show itself in the hardness towards the other. There. In the moments, either internally or away from here, externally, with the hardness of the voice that comes. First thing would be to address, what is it that you want and are not getting? What kind of wanting is going on? Got to be some wanting in there if there's being judgmental.
I see it not only with him, but no. Also with my mother, for example,
yes.
That there are some things I want to be different, but like I want the person to be different in some ways, and I know it's something that I shouldn't want.
No.
I want to accept the person as he is.
All right. So sometimes, and for the point of humility, I want somebody to change, but I'm finding it incredibly difficult to change myself, which is in fact to soften or dissolve the judgmental critic. Yeah. So sometimes we're looking to others, but we're actually having a job dealing with ourselves. And sometimes that in a communication really, really has to be remembered. There. One aspect here. Since the critic, inwardly or outwardly or both, is a hardening of the voice, and of course all the history, the psychological stuff, doesn't interest me too much there. But more importantly, what will help facilitate the movement and the shift, and it's a radical one, from the hard voice to a softer voice? What's going to allow the softer voice to come in? It may be giving some feedback. It may be expressing some concern. But it's not coming from the judging of the other. What's going to contribute in your life to a softening of the voice?
It's a thinking that I had that to see myself and the other like two separate beings. And,
yes.
And not that I own my husband or
no.
I own somebody, and then if he's separate from me, he's a free man, he can do whatever he wants.
Yes.
I don't know, something like
so what one
freedom.
Yeah, all right. It's a precious point here. So the good points that you make, the deeper in the being they go, will begin to replace the old voice. So it's a fresh voice. Dharma language, the voice of the gods. And meaning by that, one can look at the person, whoever she or he is, family member, partner, or other, and recognize in the viewing of the other the freedom to be themselves, the freedom to stay, the freedom to be different from you. Yeah. And that, those perceptions, not easy to remember, because the habit is the critic. So, it's not helpful to keep criticizing the critic, because it's putting wood on the fire. It keeps that ego, in the Sanskrit, ahamkara, that I-making activity. So the voice needs to soften. The other, with the critic, it's often caught up in the world of right and wrong. I am right, you are wrong. What's another way of relating two differences when it's not being viewed as one is right and the other is wrong?
We are both right.
No, no. Oh, no, you're not.
I don't have a good answer for that.
Oh, no, that's easy. So, with the critic, it carries a lot of approval, disapproval. And the negative, it would be a lot of disapproval. As we said, the disapproval will then carry on over to the other. And that person will feel judged, and if they keep hearing it, will begin to resent it, and that will feed the judgmental critic back to you. Has to. Internalize it, it will build, and it will come back, and then it's arguing, and you know, it's beginning of the end, really. So, the softening of the voice, the quiet commitments that you make, and the small suggestion in the good time and space that you have here is to give a little bit of reflection, be in touch with the love, which is the key to this, be in touch with the love, and can I stay out of the box of the right and the wrong? Right and wrong applies when there's clear ethical issues. Then we might talk right and wrong language. But often it's nothing to do with that. So if you, with your meditations, you're connecting in with the heart there, and you ask yourself the question, how, when I have a difference of view with another, whatever it might be, what is a way I can relate in a clear, soft, firm way, and not be in the judge who is pronouncing guilty and not guilty, right and wrong, praise and blame, approval and disapproval. And it's a practice. And just listen to that and see what emerges for you from it.
Good. Okay,
and let me know.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. So I'll just give a short reflection. Another good lady just went out, so she. Sometimes, as we hear, it's not an easy one, that in our contact with the others, whoever they may be, particularly with important people and voices of authority in our life, that has an impact upon us, and it affects heart and mind and speech and communications. And of course, particularly as we often hear with family members, it's frequently a real challenge. And it's so easy to forget in that challenge the all that parents have done for us, all that they have gone through, countless numbers of sacrifices, and also all their kind of struggles, and may not have had the privileges nor the opportunities that you and I have to look at ourselves, to work on ourselves, to go deep into ourselves, to engage in change. And it's rather a fortunate generation of us with those opportunities which are actually being expressed here. And it is terribly easy to view the parents, particularly, and others, in a particular way, and not quite understanding all the causes and conditions that make them up, and which make us up there. If, as I said, if there is a real lot of pressure, and there's a lot of demand coming from parents, even though they may think it's well-intentioned, but one feels it's quite harmful for one's peace of mind there, then one must give oneself, as an act of kindness to oneself, some space. I cannot see the point in going frequently to parents or to authority figures, and one just comes out of it feeling shattered. And the few times over the years I have said, if you don't like your parents, find some new ones. And people find this a little difficult to comprehend. And one person, one woman, I mentioned this in Europe on a retreat a year or so ago. And a couple of months later, one woman wrote to me. And she said, "Christopher, I found a new mother." And she said, "I'm just writing to express thank you." And she said, "There's an older woman in my office. And I feel she's a generation older than me. I feel I can talk with her. I can listen. I learn a lot from her. And we have a really loving connection." And that change, she said, has really influenced me in a really healthy way when I go to see my earth mother, as she said. And she said, "Now I can go and see my earth mother, and I'm not expecting anything from her. I know how she actually is. I know the kind of things she says to me, and she will continue to say to me. And she says, now I can just listen without having to argue and fight and defend myself." And sometimes in life, we go from the gods, the first gods called mother and father, to and we find a new mother and father. And that also can bring about inside of us a genuine capacity to be at ease with the good parents there. We also, in looking and in the explorations as well that we have with life and with the circumstances which take place, many questions can arise about Dharma and the practice. The general principle, I hope other teachers also remember from different traditions, that the general principle is when here, in this case here is Tovana, and with all the dedication and the commitment that you all give and the support that you give to the practice, to the instructions in the morning and much else, that it's a support which keeps that actualized and keeps it flowing. And when you leave here and it finishes, and you may well go and attend a workshop or a retreat or a program with another teacher, there may be similarities or differences, as we discussed Goenkaji and here. And I would say, when you are there, please, please do that fully and totally as possible. Very easily, if one doesn't, the easy things that start happening, one is comparing. "Oh, I did this, and now I'm doing this, and is that better than this? Is this better than that?" And it's got nothing to do with the event. There's the event of the previous, there is the event which is now, and keeping the trust in the event, and when it's complete, of course, we would wish people to return and engage again, and you may experience something fresh and completely new. Don't cling, don't hold on to the events here. So there's a freedom to explore, and one is really genuinely taking good care for that. And then finally, this very, very common voice of the critic. So there's a hard tone upon ourselves. Friendship, metta, kindness is give a great support. It's really, as the good lady said there, with the voice, and certainly in the external, when the judgmental mind is taking place, how quickly and easily three things can occur. The voice gets faster, the voice can get louder, and the voice can interrupt the other to prevent, cut off her or her speaking. So if we're going to stay a bit more deep in the being, when facing difficult voices there, we do need to be rather grounded and centered, and really have the capacity to listen, and as I mentioned, through the ears there. And sometimes, if it is too much, one must exercise a simple human right, thank you, but no thank you. And rather than get into a lot of turmoil that robs us of sleep and peace of mind, we say, no thank you. And particularly if the person is angry, then particularly no thank you. And this one is made of pretty strong metal to take the other person's aggression. And there are lots of people in this hall and elsewhere who are sensitive people. The heart is a sensitive and just can't cope with aggression and anger. And sometimes we have to say no thank you. And perhaps when the person has chilled out, perhaps that might be the time to speak there. So this respect for ourselves and mindfulness with our voice to the others. And that doesn't mean to say we become passive. Doesn't mean to say we accept everything that we hear there. We keep the voice of looking at issues. At times we keep the voice of the quiet concern that we have. We point things out. We're not afraid to point things out. But in the pointing of things out, the underlying intention is kindness and clarity. And therefore the meeting of heart and the voice of concern really keep working together. It's a huge practice. But without such explorations and practices, violence between human beings will continue. Thank you for letting me hear. Thank you.